previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
The hour grows late. Rick Grimes of Alexandria. You have given the king much to ponder.
Well, when I was a kid, my mother told me a story. There was a road to a kingdom. It was a rocky road. People would just avoid it, but horses would break their legs on it and die. Wagon wheels come off. You lose, but it comes up. That's the girl. That's the girl. People would lose the goods they'd become in the cells. Dirt soaked it all up and it was gone.
The hour grows late.
That was their family's last chance.
Rick Grimes of Alexandria.
They were hungry, didn't have any money.
Rick
sat there and cried, but...
The hour grows late.
She wondered why I was still there.
You have given the king much to ponder. Rick Grimes. The hour grows late. Rick.
It was a bag of gold.
All right.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 145 for the week of February 13th, 2017. I am well-fed apocalypse tiger David D. Cole, and I'm here with studded bat Sarah D. Bunting.
Don't call me Lou.
Happy Suicide, Tara Ariano.
I missed all of this.
And Bludgeon Skull, Omar Gallega.
Maggie, I think this is going to leave a mark.
Normally I would start over after a flub like that, but because our intro clip was 2 minutes long, I'm just going to say, well fled, love the dog tiger.
Well said.
Well fed. Apocalypse Tiger. Because our topic this week is The Walking Dead. And joining us is Omar, our Walking Dead recapper and expert. Welcome, Omar.
Hi. Thanks
Hi,
for having
Omar.
Me.
Yay!
Omar.
Yes, sir.
So, you know, you've been paid to watch The Walking Dead this season. A lot of people found it was a bit much, but you, sir, were paid to carry forth to watch.
I'm what's left, yeah. I still gotta hang in there.
But you had to watch. So what are your thoughts after the brutal start of this season? Where did you think it went? Do you think it was successful? Did you like it? Did you not like it?
Yeah, the mid-season premiere was pretty good. It was a little bit longer than usual, but not the bloated 90-minute episodes that we were seeing a lot of earlier in the season. It really is just scene setting for kind of what the comics refer to as all-out war with Negan. This is basically Rick trying to raise an army. He's fed up. He's not going to take it anymore, so he has to go to the other villages and figure out a way to get them on board to fight and rise up against Negan. So this whole first episode was really just that, Rick going to the hill. Top Rick going to the Ezekiel's village, or the kingdom, and trying to
the kingdom
them.
Omar Ezekiel. Of Austin. You are referring to the kingdom of the kingdom.
Huzzah! So that's really what the episode was about. There was one really great action scene involving a steel cable mowing down hundreds of zombies. That was
amazing.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was great.
That was cool.
But otherwise, I mean, it was pretty much typical Walking Dead. Rick is trying to concoct a plan to rise up and you know, keep his survivors from dying off and getting bludgeoned in the head. And Negan was actually off scene for the whole episode. We don't see Negan. We hear him eulogize a character that was killed in the finale. So yeah, it was pretty much, you know, typical Walking Dead, more group stuff, more ensemble. We're not focusing on just one character for a whole episode, which is kind of frustrating. It was a pretty good return to form. The ratings seem to have bounced back since a steady decline over this season. And I don't hear as much grumbling about it as I did. I mean, people were really bummed out by that first, by that premiere, that season 7 premiere. And I started to think, like, is this the show people want right now? People are so bummed out otherwise, politically, right, socially. Is this, you know, nihilistic show what people really want? Do they want more escapism and something more positive? But this show had a little bit more humor and a little bit more levity than a typical Walking Dead episode.
I'm always willing to come back to a show if I hear it's getting better. But for me, like, I was watching this episode and I enjoyed the episode fine. You're right, it's typical, but it's also, it's typical. Like, I came back to the show after whatever, 6 episodes, and like, this show, I don't know, because of the setting, because of, you know, the situation in the world, it only has so many options, but Carol's left the group once again. The real monster is man. Pacifist versus realist. Like, it's the same thing over and over at a slightly different location.
The doctor was his mother. Just wanted to be part of it. Sorry.
But, you know, but like, not that the Walking Dead ever really broke out of the themes that it established and then sort of just rotate in and out. Like, it really is like, well, like, having taken a break from the show and coming back, I'm like, wow, this show just really likes those 4 or 5 things to talk about. And like, the only thing that's left from that cycle is like, Rick wants to take up sewing and not have to worry about leadership again. Like, that's the only part of that cycle that's missing. Like, Farmer Rick.
that was a bad turn.
Yeah.
Farmer Rick
lost half a season, and I felt like, oh yeah, I know all these. I know this tune.
Well, and I think also, as someone who does only dip into it occasionally, this did feel fairly typical to me. Like, in that there were some really cool parts. Like, the mowing was amazing. And like, there occasionally they'll throw in this little thing, like that there was a guitar break that I recognized, don't ask me why, as the overture of to Handel's Messiah. I mean, I recognized it because I know the piece, but it's like, that's interesting that they would use that and rewrite it for like a more modern banjo picking sound. But then it's also typical in that it contains all the problems that I've had with this show from the jump, and is why I quit it halfway through the first season, which is like, you know, in the first episode, like, Rick is just sort of wandering around and not fucking asking anyone anything. He's just like, hey, I'm Rick. Maybe we should stick together. Like, but don't you want to know what's going on? Like, ask the question.
That sounded like the first verse to a post-apocalyptic Call Me Maybe.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Rick.
And this is crazy. It's crazy.
Tell me, maybe. But, and then this time it's like, he's telling this story that, as we heard, like, it's still going on in some alternate dimension. It's like, if you're not the one holding the tiger, get to the fucking point in 10 words or less. I feel like that's a good rule.
Yeah, that Rick story was rough. That was long. That was
like, 8 minutes in, I was like, does this story have a point? Could we get there today?
Only
please?
Thing that, like, story was missing was sort of the Larry King narrates the Bible version of the lineage of the king. Just because, since you brought it up, I wanted to say, how did they manage to make a CG tiger that looks better than a CG chain? How did they manage to make the chain the worst part of that computer generated scene? That was amazing. It takes a real special shitty talent to actually fuck up a metal chain when compared to a furry creature.
I think they just stole the tiger from Life of Pi. They just like lifted it straight from the movie.
Cut out the boat, put him on a stage. Totally.
Yeah. Looked up this pile. Yeah. You know, the weird thing about this show is that it's so brutal and dark and gory, but it really just is comfort television. You know, like, it really is a familiar play over and over again.
Yeah, and apart from the quirk from Who Lives and Who Dies each season, yeah, it really is a story about Rick and Carl and Michonne and the people that you know aren't going to get killed off, like Daryl. And they kind of just keep going through the motions of being the characters that they are. I mean, Rick kind of had a breakdown at one point, but since then, he's kind of the same guy, and he's always just kind of like, you know, bullying his way into a situation and, you know, kind of suffering for a while and then coming out, you know, on top as trying to, you know, get everybody on board to his wacky plans that never work.
It's not necessarily a bad thing either, like that it's comfortable in its skin, so to speak. But it's just like sometimes I wish the show would take more chances with its world.
The Ezekiel thing has been refreshing to me because there would be weirdos in the apocalypse. There would be strange people doing weird shit that, you know, out of character. I mean, I'm so tired of the glum survivor thing. You know, it's really gotten old. So, yeah, and the comics have really settled into like a how do we rebuild society? The zombies are only a danger when they're in a gigantic clump, you know, when they're in a big herd. People, you know, you're kind of left with the best of the best of the survivors, so they're not going to get killed just randomly by zombies unless somebody, you know, sabotages them or puts them in a trap. So that's kind of what's happened on the show, is that you're not, you know, Rick and Michonne can be surrounded by literally hundreds of zombies and you know they're not going to get bitten. And so then the narrative possibilities have to go elsewhere. They have to go to like bigger and bigger stakes. And I think it gets harder every season for them to top, you know, zombie deaths, because they have to get more and more elaborate and gory and weird.
Well, I was just going to ask, based on what you were just saying, if you felt like that was where maybe the show ran into some trouble with Negan, because like, I mean, first of all, he wasn't in this episode, which I was a little bummed out about, because I know that everyone was like, oh my God, he's, you know, gory and totally over the top and he gives these long monologues. But I mean, it's Jeffrey Dean Morgan. He can just read me the phone book. I'm good with that. Probably would be impregnated by it, in fact. And it is a fictional character. But like that, even he, after the premiere, was like, that was too much. I kind of wanted to quit this job. Yeah. So I was wondering what people thought about like, just if they sort of used Negan properly, like in the world of the show, and also if you think they used the break to sort of maybe walk him back a little bit in any way.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think there was definitely a little bit too much Negan in the first half of the season. The problem is he's way more interesting than Rick. He's way more interesting,
right,
than most of the survivors, except for maybe Ezekiel and Michonne. So, yeah, they kind of overused him a little bit, and he became a lot less scary. But he's so charming, and he's so easy on the eyes, and he's so funny at times and unpredictable. So, like, you have this sort of thing where the bad guy is so much more interesting than the good guys that you kind of want to focus on him, which was the opposite problem with the governor, because the governor was kind of a drip. He was not that interesting, and they focused so much on the governor for so long that he really stopped being scary or interesting. And this is sort of the opposite problem, is you've got this kind of a lightning in a bottle, and how much do you use it? So it right. was nice. It was nice to at least get an audio clip of him in the episode. That was pretty funny. and he's Jeffrey Dean Morgan is contracted for like another, I think, 2 seasons. So he's going to be around for a while, and he's still around in the comics. So that character's not going anywhere. I think they need to kind of figure out like, how do we extend the life of this character and not overuse him and not have him, you know, be not scary or people get tired of him before we play out this long storyline.
I will backtrack to Dave's question about my reaction to Ezekiel not having read the comics, which is I'm interested to know how this complete weirdo, one of the things that might make me pick the show back up again is to find out the promise that we might find out more about, like how he got all of these apparently very effective survivors to like be his subjects when he is maybe like mentally ill or something, you know? Because the kingdom seems pretty functional, and like he's just kind of off in a corner being a weirdo. So like that tension was interesting to me.
There is an episode earlier in the season where he kind of drops the character with Carol and kind of tells her that he was kind of this community actor guy and sort of just found. Yeah, he does explain it, but he doesn't really explain how he got that you know, much accomplished with that. But it does explain that, you know, he's not mentally ill. He just found a character that people would follow.
And all right, sort fair
of
enough. Like,
well, that's my shtick. I'm going to stick to it. And it worked for him.
I mean, it's the credit of maybe of having like a good prop in this case, the tiger, to make it.
Yeah, the tiger is very convincing. Did you see my CGI tiger? It's very convincing.
Yeah. Don't look directly at it. It's a hologram.
Don't look at the chain.
I really enjoy the community center where he's at, the backdrop, you know, being whatever, Camelot or whatever it was,
yeah.
You know, adequately painted in backdrop was a nice touch. I feel like if the show can keep itself from going as brutal and dark and kind of meaninglessly so as it did in the premiere, that I would definitely come back to it. There's, as I say, there's a certain comfort in the rhythm of the show. You know, I don't think it's exactly important television, you know, like a lot of other contemporary AMC TV shows were, but it's certainly interesting and kind of fun at times. Like, damn, that wire, double car wire thing was absurdly.
It was great. It was very excellent. Satisfying to watch.
Yes.
And then just the sound as well. It's like they put a wet piece of bacon into a fan. Like, that's awesome.
Also that they're just kind of looking at each other like, I know you've lived through this terrible apocalypse and you've seen people die, but if you're in either one of those cars, you got to have a pretty good shit-eating grin on your face while that's happening.
Yeah.
Come on, guys. You know, live a little.
All right.
What do you think, Omar?
Yeah, I agree. I still read the comics. I still like the comics. I think I like the idea of a show about, okay, we've gotten past the zombie emergency. How do we rebuild society? And how do we, like, what are the politics of having different factions? And in the comic, like, Rick is sort of becomes like an elder statesman. Like, he's not even in charge of everything anymore after a while. And he sort of has to like reconcile, like, well, I'm not the young guy that gets to go out and fight zombies anymore. I'm the old guy that stays at home and tells people what to do. I think that's a really interesting, a really interesting thing. But, you know, with the TV show, it's paced so differently. And every episode, they feel like they have to do this zombie killing set piece.
Right.
And that's not really the rhythm of the comics anymore. They will like go on for several issues with nothing really happening. And then one big explosive set piece that I feel like the TV show will probably steal as many of those as possible.
Final thought. We can go around the table on this final thought. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much does Carl need to cut his hair?
Oh, God.
It's actually like forming into like spiral, like, you know,
beachy
braids
waves.
Or
yeah,
something.
Yes.
Like, it's absurd. I know it's the apocalypse. I know there's no barber shops that are open, but you can still grab a pair of scissors and go to town.
He can get fucking like battery powered clippers. That hairstyle takes a minimum of 3 products and 2 tools to achieve.
And impractical because, you know, much like martial arts or boxers or whatever, you don't want to give things for people to grab onto.
Yep.
And it's hot as fuck.
Yes.
And he has that stupid fucking hat on still.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Go to hell, Carl.
Now that's the kind of segue I can get behind into our next segment, which of course is The Blotter Presents. Coincidentally, with our Texan guest this week, I have 2 films that are about Texas crimes. The first actually aired on Investigation Discovery back in October, I believe, but you can watch it on the app and online. We will link it in the show notes. It's called Southwest of Salem, The Story of the San Antonio Four, which is about the case of 4 women, all gay, who, because one of their ex-brother-in-laws was hitting on them and was turned down. He decided it would be an awesome idea to have his daughters, this one woman's nieces, make up a story about how they were satanically gang raped by these women, which pretty clearly didn't happen. But they all spent 15 years in jail. They've been released relatively recently, and the like retrial process is still going through the courts. I wasn't like psyched to, it sat on my DVR for 4 months because it was an Investigation Discovery movie. I'm pleased to report that Investigation Discovery is really trying to be less of a giant, you know, cheese log with nuts all the time. It's better than you'd, much better than you'd expect. It's compellingly built. It's a good story. There is still kind of this sense of like trying it on from the network as far as being more serious and less salacious and wives with knivesy. And it doesn't do a great job of illuminating how this guy and his mother probably allegedly coached the girls to, you know, in a way that was so effective that four women would go to jail. The Satanism aspect was like a real thing back in the day, and is not explored in as much depth as the title might imply, possibly because that invites comparisons to the Paradise Lost films that this one is unlikely to bear up under. But for an investigation discovery film, it is quite good. I hope that they continue trending towards quality. And once again, you'll be able to find that in the show notes. And I believe it's also available on demand through your cable system. The other film is called Tower. It is about the UT Tower shooting in 1966. It is this rather strange, partly animated property that's based on an oral history of the attacks that was in Texas Monthly in 2006 by Pamela Koloff. She also wrote an extended account of one woman's life since surviving the shooting in an issue of Texas Monthly last year. I definitely recommend Texas Monthly's crime coverage generally. They're outstanding with that long form stuff, really well written. And this Tower, which is on Independent Lens, check your local PBS listings, is really good. I thought the animation might be a little cheesy. I thought the contemporary music cues might be a little on the nose, but the voice reenactments are really good. There's one sequence where Claire de Lune is playing and cops are kind of climbing the tower to try to get to Charles Whitman and end the madness. And it's very sad and moving and well done. The director is Keith Maitland. This may also be on demand in the PBS app. I will check that and put that in the show notes as well. But two solid outings from the Texas True Crime Unit. And that's the Blotter Presents for the week.
With all this Texas talk, I just want to do a Texan test, make sure that people that are from Texas really are from Texas. Stars at night are big and bright.
Deep in the heart of Texas. I should just add real quick, Tower has been getting a lot of attention here locally, and Pamela Koloff, yeah, I follow her on Twitter. She's an amazing writer. Tower, definitely, everybody in Austin's talking about it right now. It's airing in my market tonight, so I'm looking forward to watching it.
Now, before we proceed, we have a message for Kim.
Kim is turning 100 years old. Specifics aren't important. Here's what you need to know. Several of her loved ones wanted us to mark the occasion.
We're told that Kim was once banned from the Television Without Pity boards for 24 hours for putting a YouTube link in a comment, which is not a rule I personally remember, but no. Which I assume there was probably a good reason for, and then a question mark.
We're also told that Kim and her loved ones are Canadian, so with that in mind, we present a list of Canadian TV rules that a badass renegade like Kim would probably also flout.
Kim probably wouldn't go to the mat in defense of Peter Mansbridge as the world's most important news anchor.
Kim probably doesn't sing along with the Smarties jingle or eat the red ones last.
Kim probably doesn't even agree that "You Know I Canna Read a Word" is the best Canadian Heritage Minute.
So from all of us,
and from Chris, Caitlin, and Brayden,
Happy birthday, Kim!
It is time to go around the dial. First stop, Tara Ariana.
I wanted to briefly talk about the return for season 2 of Humans.
Heard of them.
Thank you.
Heard of them.
The story gets, it sort of expands in scope a little bit. The first episode, which as we record this, aired last night, two nights ago, if you're listening to this the day it drops, on ANC. Of course, all of season 2 has already aired in Britain. If you flew to England to watch it, all of this may be old news to you. But the ramifications of the consciousness programming code start to have effects. And that means we get to meet some new characters, which is what my first post about the season sort of focused on, which ones are the most compelling to least compelling. It was fortuitous timing that there was a tech bro character who I'd forgotten how terrible he was. I think we watched all of the season over the holidays. Dave, is that right? We jammed a lot of them.
It was a while ago. Yeah.
I'm rewatching them as they air on AMC, and there's a character who's like a Zuckerberg-y type. Unfortunately, an American character played by a British actor, quite obviously. But at a time when tech bros are getting getting headlines and not for the good reasons like you want, that this character is having more prominence sort of makes him seem nefarious right out of the gate, whether he is or not. Spoiler alert, he kind of is. So if you missed season one, it's available in places. Season two is definitely worth watching. If you're burned out on are robots real or are they not after Westworld, I mean, my complaint with Westworld all along was that humans is the better version of the story because it has a less fantastical sort of setting and context. Season two, I will say, is not as revelatory as season one. Would you agree, Dave?
Yeah. But I will say that season two sort of does end up picking up. I made a throwaway comment at some point. We were talking about humans earlier that
heard of
up them. Until like we're like at episode four. I was like, when do they get to the human fireworks factory?
Yeah.
And they finally do. But it was felt like they kind of spun their wheels for maybe like the first quarter to half of the season.
Yeah.
So it does get better in season two. But yeah, it's not as. The it's not as strong as season one for sure.
Yeah, but the implications of, I mean, it happens in the cold open, so I feel like it's okay to say that, you know, the consciousness code does get pushed out to the synth population, but it doesn't have the immediate effect that Niska maybe assumed. But it's still interesting to see, you know, how that plays out with the new characters and how, you know, they really treat free will differently. It's an interesting philosophical question.
Speaking of The Walking Dead, if you've watched The Walking Dead and you've heard fucking Rick and Morgan, you know, have arguments about killing people versus, you know, hugging them and hoping that they won't kill you back, you'll find some themes in Humans season two. Heard of them? Kind of familiar.
Yeah, I guess. Anyway, so for my plug, I will plug my coverage of Humans, which will be spooling out every week for the next 8 weeks on previously.tv. Editorial comment from Omar. Thanks.
Excuse me.
Speaking of Omar, it is your turn. Please proceed.
I wanted to talk about Legion, which I hadn't heard talked about on Extra Hot Grade yet. Except maybe a while back when it was first announced. This is a show on FX. It is based on a Marvel property. I think it was like in the 90s, Chris Claremont, the X-Men kind of stuff that was going on around then. The reason I got interested in watching this, because I'm not a huge superhero guy, I don't keep up with all of the movies and everything, was Noah Hawley of Fargo is the showrunner, and he wrote and directed the pilot. And I'm way, way, way in the tank for Noah Hawley. I loved Fargo season two. He's an Austin guy. I've read his most recent novel and it's really good. I think he's a major, major talent. And I wanted to see what he could do with superheroes and the Marvel universe and X-Men. So the pilot is really, really visually amazing. It's really well done. It's a 90-minute pilot about a guy who has mental health issues, or does he? He has major superpowers. I don't know if this is correct or not, but I think he's the son of Charles Xavier from X-Men.
Yeah, you know, I think that's... Yeah, I think you're right.
So most of the pilot episode takes place in a mental hospital, and Aubrey Plaza shows up as a sort of wacky sidekick. But the show is very dark. It's got a lot of darkness to it. It's got a lot of really striking visuals. It's really well directed. The acting is really solid. The main guy, I'm blanking on his name, but he's the guy from Downton
Stevens.
Abby. Dan Stevens, yep. He's solid, and I just really liked what they did in the pilot. I thought it was really interesting. The one hesitation I had was that it would go the Mr. Robot route of, is this real or not? Is this all in his head? I was really frustrated by that idea. But toward the end of the episode, there's a very clear, like, no, this is really happening, and everything going forward, I think, is going to be based on some sort of, like, solid ground, I hope.
Yeah.
But based on the pilot, I'm totally on board. I really like what I saw of that first 90 minutes.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it yet, like, don't go into it thinking you're getting an X-Men TV show.
Yeah, no.
Like, it really is more like a, you know, show about this guy's mental health, if anything, you know, like it's, and also Dan, I did not clue in that that was Dan Stevens' little Tartomi at the end of the episode. Mm. And I, just because yeah. it's Dan Stevens, I have to say, I am good at car. One of my favorite Tar Arietta repeating jokes from her.
That wasn't him, though. He was already dead by then.
Oh, who were you doing? Oh, it was the replacement
the other guy.
Yeah, well, nobody was good at car, too.
Yes,
he was killed by car.
Right. Yeah. Dan Stevens, he was bad at car.
Well, the other thing I really like about the show is that, like Fargo, it uses music really well. It's really interestingly cut visually. Like, it uses a lot of different filmmaking techniques. It's just, I think it's really cool.
Have you watched Beyond the first one?
Beyond the first episode? No.
Okay. The second one hasn't aired yet, Dave. Okay. It airs tonight as this episode
got
drops.
Got it. Yeah.
Is it going in the right direction?
I was just curious. Like, I Tara didn't enjoy the pilot as much as I did.
I mean,
but I did feel like the
I fell asleep. So I have to go back and watch the bit that I fell asleep for. Proceed.
I was just going to say, you know, the pilot was pretty full, both of content, and at times I thought of itself a little bit, like it was a little too like pleased with itself at times. I thought
it's very stylistic. Yeah. It's
yeah.
Showy. Yeah.
So knowing that, you know, the creator of the TV show, the, you know, the lead, that Noah, he wrote it and directed it. Is that right? You said,
mm-hmm. Yes.
That
he's the showrunner for both
I'm
shows.
I'm wondering, yeah, like, you know, when you get one guy who can control the whole thing, sometimes he, you know, indulges himself. So I'm curious to see if it settles a little bit on that. But also, Omar, I know you also read Saga, the comic book. Did you get a Saga vibe from the dead helper person in the pilot?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I wondered if she was going to stick around past the pilot or not, because I really like Aubrey Plaza in that. So yeah, I've quite enjoyed it. And the other thing I wanted to say for around the dial is rest in peace, Al Jarreau.
Yeah.
Aww.
As soon as I heard the news, the moonlighting theme popped into my head, which was discussed previously on Extra Hot Great. So just wanted to give a shout out to Mr. Al Jarreau. Rest in peace.
Some walk but not.
I was going to ask if we could sing
that. We've already mentioned it, but you should definitely check out Omar's Walking Dead recaps as the season goes on. And Omar, you also have your own podcast, right?
I do. I do Statesman Shots, which is an Austin-focused podcast that I do with my co-host, Tali Mosley. And I'm also recapping Saturday Night Live for Previously.tv. So check out those when it comes back. I think March 4th is the next one with Octavia Spencer.
And one more plug for Absent Friends. John Ramos, a past and future guest of the show, is covering Legion for us at Previously.tv as well.
Oh, excellent.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Nobody is covering Bravo's Imposters for us. I sort of hate watched it. Like, we had a screener, so I was like, all right, well, I think this is going to be really annoying because A, the ad campaign was super annoying, and B, Bravo's experiments with scripted entertainment have not really worked. For me, they're trying to like be USA shows, but with even more swears. I don't even know what they're trying to do. This one's actually pretty good. The lead up, like the promo campaign, was deeply annoying, but it's actually quite funny. There's like a buddy comedy aspect to it, but then it's also very processy about how it would work that this con woman would have three different people believing that she's, you know, their faithful wife and true love. I especially am curious as to how she explained the wig to each of them, because she doesn't use her real hair with any of them. And I'm hopeful that the buddy chemistry of the jilted spouses continues, and that the lead, Inbar Lavi, who is much, much less slappable than the promos and that terrible Belgian accent would lead you to believe, continues to be basically, it's like white collar with a lady lead so far, which is good, because White Collar for a few seasons was very fun and stylish and not quite such a self-serious labor to watch as it turned into. But here's what, you know, here's my real seal of approval. Brian Benben is in it. He's cast correctly and is not annoying. So there you go. I mean, there's something to be said for a show that can find something for Brian Benben to do.
Can I make a full confession here? I was waiting for you to say something about the person is supposed to be a minister or something, but that apparently is a different show. Is there one called
Impastor?
Okay. So we have on television at the same time, we have Imposters and Impastors.
Well, no, because Impastor got canceled.
Okay.
And Imposters probably will be canceled soon. But until then, I'm just going to check it out. It's definitely good, like bill paying fizzy fun in the old school USA show mode. My plug is for my advice column on my site, tomatonation.com. It is called The Vine. It is back after a long hiatus, and I welcome all kinds of questions from relationships to what kind of political reading you think you should be doing, and can anyone recommend stuff? We will answer, the group think will answer any and all questions. So please send those to my email, bunting@tomatonation.com.
Follow up from last week, I think. Yes. Gordon Lightfoot's out of surgery. Doing fine. Thank you, everybody, for your well-wishes.
Scabbing up real nice.
Okay, so this is another retro ad corner clip, but I just want to preface this by saying I listened to it. This is really the commercial starring the man who will calmly and collectively murder you.
Okay.
This is a man who smokes Marlboro cigarettes. What kind of a man is he?
I'm a guy who likes to work on my car. I like to take it apart and put it back together. I get to working on it and forget where I am, what time it is. I even forget to eat.
You don't forget to smoke, though.
I always smoke when I work. They go together.
Why Marlboro?
Well, it's a combination of things. When I draw on a cigarette, I want to taste something. With Marlboro, I do. Yet it's got a filter that works. Then there's this flip-top box. I like things that are well-designed. This box is interesting and practical.
Would you recommend Marlboro to your friends?
I already have.
New Marlboro. Filter, flavor, flip-top box. Popular filter price.
Right?
What?
Now you're dead.
I like them French fried potatoes.
So, it's like it's his dad.
How very strange.
Aubergine Noir. Spigmonometer. What do you think?
Not bad.
Now, the first one was Odo's actor's name, I'm pretty sure, right?
Correct, yes. Also his brother Remy, who was on The Americans.
And Renee was on Benson. Hello. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the other one is some sort of meter to measure something, I'm going to guess. Spigs.
Yeah.
As always, thank you for your support. Did anybody know how to say that properly? Spigmonometer? Sphygmomanometer. Thank you again for your support. You can buy a Dave Word for $20 at previously.tv/as to support the podcast, or buy a $50 personal ad or a $100 business ad. As always, thank you for your support. All right, everybody, it is time for the canon. Omar is presenting this week. Buckle in.
Oh boy, strap in. Yeah, it's going to take a while. Today, I am submitting season 2, episode 22 of Twin Peaks, an episode called Beyond Life and Death, which turned out to be the season series finale for the show. I don't think they knew that when they filmed it. They thought it might go on another season or two. It aired in June of 1991 on ABC after a wildly inconsistent second season that bled viewers and marred the memory of the first nearly perfect 8-episode first season. I'm submitting this to the canon for a couple reasons. One, there's only been one other Twin Peaks canon submission that I'm aware of, episode 3, Zen, or The Skill to Catch a Killer. One of only a handful of episodes actually directed by David Lynch, the co-creator of the show. That one introduced a lot of the dream elements that would make the show so memorable and that figure prominently into this finale. Two, Twin Peaks is returning in May to Showtime, and I thought it would be a good time to see where we left off with this town and these characters. There's been a recent book by the other Twin Peaks co-creator, Mark Frost, that offers some table setting for the new run and kind of tells you where what some of the things happened after the show ended. And after the show was canceled, David Lynch directed a whole separate movie called Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me that was sort of a prequel to the show that tracked the last days of murdered homecoming queen Laura Palmer, but it also offered clues to the fates of FBI agent Dale Cooper and his girlfriend Annie. It was trashed at the time, but has kind of come to be regarded as one of David Lynch's more interesting films, maybe not his best, but kind of interesting in the larger scheme of his work. I think the quality of the finale episode goes a long way toward explaining why the show is coming back. The second season was universally panned, is still considered pretty crappy. The finale actually makes a major return to form that brings back the mystique of the show and reminds us what made it so great and interesting and influential in the first place. The show lasted fewer than 30 episodes, but it's still the subject of endless discussion. The cast has gone on to do a lot of really interesting things. Lynch has gone on to do a lot of interesting things. There's still a lot of goodwill towards the show in general, I think. So let's get into it. When the show re-aired on Bravo a few years after it was canceled, director David Lynch actually filmed all new introductions for each episode featuring the late Catherine Coulson as the Log Lady. So here's part of the intro for Beyond Life and Death, courtesy of YouTube. Clip one, please.
And now, an ending. Where there was once one, there are now two. Or were there always two? What is a reflection? A chance to see two?
Confused? Just wait. We open the actual episode on the show's iconic theme music by Angelo Badalamenti. Clip two, please. Gotta set the mood. So we open on a schmoopy Deputy Andy and pregnant Lucy Moran before we dive into the actual command center of the town of Twin Peaks' sheriff's office. FBI agent Dale Cooper and Sheriff Harry S. Truman and Deputy Hawk are trying to close in on the town's central mystery. Where is the Black Lodge and where's bad guy Wyndham Earl, who's made off with Cooper's girlfriend Annie, played by a young Heather Graham? All they have is a map for clues that suggests that a circle of 12 sycamore trees might be a portal to another place. Clip three.
Harry, the only hope we have of finding them is somewhere in this map. Giant. Man. Fire. Fire, walk with me.
So in the middle of all this stuff about the Black Lodge, we're also tying up a bunch of loose plot threads from the kind of messy season, including what happened to eyepatch-wearing Nadine after a sandbag fell on her head. That really happened. And the revelation that Ben Horn is actually Donna Hayward's biological father, a scene that plays out in way over-the-top soap opera fashion. Clip four.
Sylvia, I told you to stay home.
What are you trying to do to this family?
Daddy! You're my daddy! You're my daddy! You're my daddy!
Daddy!
Leave my family alone!
Now, Will. Will!
That was the sound of Dr. Hayward knocking Ben Horn into the fireplace where he smashes his head and maybe dies. I don't know. That's very typical of kind of the over-the-top kind of right turns that Twin Peaks would take sometimes. But really, the Black Lodge sequence is why we're here. Cooper and Harry go into the scary woods and find a beautiful set of red curtains that lead Dale into the mysterious other dimension Black Lodge, where the great vocalist Jimmy Scott, the late Jimmy Scott, is singing a song called Sycamore Trees. Clip five.
And I see you I'll see you in the trees. I'll see you in the trees under the sycamore tree.
Like a lot of the best of Twin Peaks, it really takes its time with this sequence, this stunning sequence. We see the dancing little man from another place and the inscrutable face of Dale Cooper as he tries to unlock the mystery of the Black Lodge. It's a thing of beauty, and it's what anchors the whole sequence. Without Kyle MacLachlan's performance, I don't think any of this works. Outside, Sheriff Harry waits all night for 10 hours before Deputy Andy shows up and tries to help out Clip 6.
Do you want a thermos of coffee? Yeah. Do you want a plate special? Yeah. Do you want dessert? Do you want pie? Harry? Harry?
So that happens. Then there's a long, drawn-out scene involving Sherilyn Fenn's character, Audrey Horne, tying herself to a bank vault, and there's a safety deposit box that explodes, probably killing the bank employee, Del Mibler, Pete Martell, and Andrew Packard, and possibly Audrey. We see a pair of thick glasses land in some bushes and money flying, which feels like a very David Lynch shot, the composition of it. There's also a diner callback to the pilot with Bobby Briggs, Shelley the waitress, Sarah Palmer, and Major Briggs, who is told via a possessed Sarah Palmer that Wyndham Earl, the bad guy, is in the Black Lodge. So that's where we go, as Cooper encounters the dead homecoming queen, Laura Palmer, who foreshadows the Showtime series by suggesting that they'll see each other again in, say, 25 years. Clip 7.
Hello, Ashley and Spoofer. I'll see you again in 25 years. Meanwhile.
What follows is a genuinely scary scene as Laura's double, her cousin Maddie, appears, and the man from another place warns of doppelgangers. Clip 8.
Doppelganger!
The thing about that scene is that it goes from creepy to kind of goofy and over the top and dumb to back to genuinely scary as Cooper is rattled enough to hightail it out of that room on a search through a bunch of curtained Black Lodge rooms that all look the same, like a purgatory maze. It is genuinely unsettling and weird and kind of holds up even after all these years. Then Cooper, suddenly bleeding from an apparent gunshot wound that we never see him getting shot, he sees himself lying next to Caroline, his first love, and then Annie, his girlfriend. Annie appears to him. Clip 9.
Dale, I saw the face. Someone who helped me.
Annie. The face of the man who killed you.
It was my husband.
Annie.
Who's Annie? It's me. It's me. It's me.
Caroline.
You must be mistaken. I'm alive.
There's more screaming from Maddie, but I'll spare you that clip. Cooper appears to make a deal with Wyndham Earl to offer his soul in exchange for Annie's safety. But then the demon who killed Laura Palmer, Bob, shows up and takes Wyndham's soul instead in a creepy, silent scream sequence. A doppelganger of Cooper with creepy blue eyes shows up, laughing, and so does Ray Wise's character Leland Palmer. And holy shit, is this completely crazy and weird and disturbing. The evil Cooper chases the good Cooper as strobe lights flash, and the bad guy seems to catch up to the good guy after a prolonged chase. And before we know it, Cooper is suddenly appearing next to a bloodied up Annie back in the woods. Harry helps him, and the next morning, Cooper is in his great northern hotel room wearing pajamas and seemingly safe. Cooper talks, but something seems off. Clip 10.
Annie. How's Annie?
She's going to be just fine. She's over the hospital.
I need to brush my teeth.
In the bathroom, Cooper spills an entire tube of toothpaste into the sink, stares at his reflection in the mirror, and breaks the glass with his head. Bob appears into the reflection, and we close on a creepy cliffhanger as Cooper starts to laugh hysterically. Clip 11.
Cooper!
And that's where we leave off, save for the closing credits in which the image of Laura Palmer appears in a cup of black coffee. Is it confusing? Yes. Confounding, for sure. But it also has a certain dream logic that makes sense given all that we've seen before. And it'll be interesting to see how long good Cooper was trapped in the Black Lodge before he presumably breaks free for the run of new episodes in May. Twin Peaks continues to be monumentally influential in television. It introduced a quirky small town sensibility that would be emulated on shows such as Northern Exposure, but its darker auteur elements would inform future Peak TV. It's still a reference point for shows as recently as Riverdale, which has been described as Archie meets Twin Peaks. We forget also what an amazing sprawling cast this show had, from Kyle MacLachlan to Piper Laurie to Russ Tamblyn. If you include the movie, there's Kiefer Sutherland, Chris Isaac, and freaking David Bowie. Many of them, including Michael Ankin and Laura Flynn Boyle, and a lot of the people who've died since the show aired won't be returning, obviously, but it speaks to the depth of the deep bench of casting that so many of the characters will return, and there'll be even more people added to the cast. David Lynch is not for everyone, but it's still remarkable that he was able to bring his distinct visual style, his fixations on duality and hidden darkness, and his sense of humor to television to such strong effect. The finale, I think, is not perfect, but it has moments that are genuinely beautiful and others that are terrifying, even some 26 years later. I think it's a good place to revisit before we get the new run of episodes, and whether they're good or bad, I think Beyond Life and Death stands as a true TV work of art and worthy of inclusion in the canon. I give it over to you.
Okay, I'll start. At a certain point, and while we were watching this last night, I said it out loud to Dave, this just aired on ABC. Like, they aired it in primetime. It's so crazy to think how different TV was then. Like, not that this was obviously typical of its time. It clearly wasn't. But, like, I cannot imagine any network showing something like this now. Like, it's even weirder than Hannibal, which is probably the next weirdest contemporary example of a network show that somehow snuck onto broadcast television against a lot of people's better judgment, surely. But yeah, it's the soapy elements are sort of, you know, off putting at first because you for like I, you know, we didn't rewatch the first half of this. I watched the show when it
really?
Was on, but I don't. What?
Well, I just think it all together, it just creates this very sort of off kilter.
Okay. Yes, I'm getting to it. At first, they seem sort of like weird and corny and off tune, but then, like, by the time you get to the scene in the bank where this unimaginably old guy is like barely clicking around on the floors, like every time he takes a step, you're worried he's going to slip and fall. Like the tension just cranks up and it makes everything that came before it, like retroactively, have even more suspense and tension and weirdness and horror. And by the time you get to that long sequence in the Black Lodge, like it's really it's extremely disturbing. Like the Laura Palmer or Maddie, like the screams we heard, it really, like, we got to the end of it and I was like, you know, I should have gone to bed. I was like, I can't go to sleep now, we have to watch something else, because it was it's too much.
I was ready to go to sleep. I had to watch a Bob's Burgers.
Yeah, you had to watch a Bob's Burger. Sorry. Yeah, it was really an experience to revisit it. I had forgotten how incredibly upsetting it is, which, even though, like, last year, John Ramos, who I mentioned earlier, did a post about this episode and like the visual language of it, which I'll link to in the show notes. But revisiting it like live is, it's quite a visceral experience. Thank you, I guess, for letting me see it again.
You're welcome.
Like, it's more disturbing than you remember, probably, Sarah.
I had no memories to go on. I did not watch this when it aired or at any time. In the meantime, my relationship with David Lynch, like culturally, is that I'm glad he exists, but I don't tend to enjoy anything that he does. Like, I get why he's important. I understand why people find his work engaging, compelling, disturbing, fascinating, etc. But this was like, you know how I kind of tend to feel about dream sequences and surrealism and whatnot, that it's like shifting reality I can deal with. But because I had no context for most of this, parts of it were disturbing, but more of it was annoying to me. But I mean, it's just a matter of taste, and I guess by not having any. I know this is sort of considered a minor classic now, this show, but it's just not, it's not for me necessarily. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I should go back and watch the entire series.
First season's so good.
Yeah, the first season is really good.
Yeah.
I think you would like it.
Yeah. But with that in mind, like this was long. This took a while. Like, one of my notes was sort of like that bank scene. Like, is this a full 3 minutes that we're spending on getting Audrey a fucking glass of water? Like, although I don't know, it's interesting to look at older shows and see when it comes up, like on Netflix or whatever, that it's going to be 47 minutes and just realize how much our expectations of what they show and how it's edited have changed. Like, we comment on it on again with this all the time, that the credits and the B-roll is like 2 minutes, 3 minutes, that you're like, get on with it. But yeah, I don't, but there's more to like a canon submission than just, you know, I laughed, I cried, it was better than Cats. But that's the problem. Like, it's weird because the issue that I have with David Lynch is that there's like the proportions of surreal and anchoring reality are a little out of whack for me, that he doesn't give you enough context, in my opinion, to make the surreal parts work or to set them off enough. And then I'm also having the issue that, like, is this a great episode in this series' run? Is this a historically important finale? Because I never watched it, I'm not sure. So I am undecided as to how I will vote. Dave, additional thoughts?
Yeah, Omar, you're saying how, like, often David Lynch and Twin Peaks will take its time with something, and certainly this episode demonstrates that. And I think where Sarah is like, oh, the bank scene, I was like, oh my god, this bank scene, this is amazing. That guy whose name isn't Murray but should be Murray, just shuffling around, such a weird sensation to watch something so banal actually be like, I was actually like whoa. He takes that sort of odd tension that somehow exists in a banking scene, and then when you get to the Black Lodge and so many things are happening, going from room to room and sort of playing out this possession play over probably what, like about a half an hour or so, and all the, you know, like a lot of weird freaky shit happens, but I think if you want to distill it, it's the story of making a deal with the devil. It's the story of getting, you know, possessed by a demon, you know, plus some stuff too. It is so creepy, but, you know, if I just chopped up 5 seconds here and 5 seconds there for people and showed them, it would like be almost comedic. The sum of its parts is so much greater. The eye contacts, like the light blue contacts, the strobe lighting. He does so much with so little. At the end of it, I was sort of annoyed with myself for being as like kind of creeped out as I was, because I don't usually get creeped out at television stuff that much. And Sarah, speaking to that Lynchian mix of reality and surrealness, like
right.
this episode is the balance is very different from most episodes of this series, especially the first season. Like a lot of town happenings and town quirkiness is going on, and it's not all this supernatural stuff, which is why I think you probably should give at least the first few episodes of the first season a chance, because okay. It is the equation is quite different. The one like weird soul scene where the fire comes out of
Windermere's head,
I was like, it was like so minimalistically effective.
It's weirdly edited and
very effective episode. Really liked it a lot. So I'm going to vote yes. Tara, what say you?
I'm going to vote yes too. I understand where you're coming from, Sarah, but like that you appreciate the thing without, you know,
liking
that
it.
It's not for you. Cause that's how I feel about Game of Thrones. Like I can recognize it's a towering achievement. It's just not one that I'm particularly interested in, but I feel like this finale is such a, like the expression of a singular vision that I still can't believe that it actually made it onto the air, and like almost for that reason alone, like I just respect the effort and the idea behind it so much, but also it creeped the fuck out of me, so I am voting yay as well.
All right, Sarah, what do you
it didn't creep me, but first of all, Omar, this was an excellent presentation.
Absolutely.
Second of all, Tara, your point is well taken that how did this go on the... I mean, this was sort of the same era as Cop Rock, so like a lot of weird shit was going on in the middle of the first Bush administration that my memory of is like kind of altered because I was in high school. But because like you don't have to enjoy every single thing that's great, right? So because it is culturally important, and I think as a couple of you guys pointed out, it has informed so many things in between... While I did not particularly enjoy this 47 minutes, I'm still going to vote yes.
Yay.
All right.
One last thought, because like you were saying how David Lynch, you can appreciate his body of work as being important, but you really can't get into it.
Yeah.
That for me, as soon as you said that, I was like, oh, that's my relationship with John Waters.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, sure,
I can't get into any of his movies,
sure,
but I always enjoy him.
Yeah.
And I think like the world is better that he's in it.
Yes, we need David Lynch, but I don't need to sign off on him, but I'm glad he exists. Yeah. So.
All right, well that's 3 for 3.
Yeah.
So Twin Peaks season 2 episode 22, Beyond Life and Death. You are hereby in the Aggregated.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for winner and loser of the week. Tara has our winner.
I do. Our winner of the week is Michael C. Hall, the once one-time Dexter, is going to be in season 2 of The Crown playing JFK. I really like that casting.
He's
He's got the hair for it, for sure. As soon as I read it, I was like, of course. He's like in his JFK years. Good for him. So that's our winner of the week.
And loser?
I am pleased to announce that Piers Morgan, who we probably shouldn't pay any more attention to because this is what he wants. He's totally an attention tumor, but he got dragged by everyone and her mom on Real Time with Bill Maher last weekend. It was about fucking time.
Yep.
Into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what else is about fucking time?
Game it's fucking
my,
time?
It's my new show called Time Fucker.
Sex Watch?
No, it's Game Time.
Hey, just as good.
Okay, everybody, this is the eighth Game Time of the season. With Kim's victory last week, the standings currently are Tara 3, Sarah 2, and Valued Guest 2. Close season. Today we are playing Name of Thrones from John Hulse, who earns himself an extra credit. Ka-ching! Redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. He writes, you know how on Game of Thrones people introduce themselves or others in one of two silly fashions, like, this is Breen of Tarth and no rainbow armor for her, or I'm Tyrion of House Lannister and that's my condom full of wine. Well, now everybody on scripted TV is getting this royal treatment. See if you can guess the show and the surname in question when the characters are introduced in the Martian fashion of announcing their forename, followed by the place they hail from.
Okay.
Okay.
You're going to get 1 point for identifying the character's full name.
Okay.
And you have to answer in the form of first name of house surname.
Got it.
Okay. So
you, and then also you'll get 1 point for identifying the show in question. So I'll give you an example. The clue is Carrie of Manhattan. So the house answer would be Carrie of House Bradshaw.
Right.
And the show involved is Sex and the City.
Got it.
All right.
Yep.
If you're stuck and you can't get anywhere, I will give you the character house name and you give me the show for 1 point.
Okay.
But there's 2 points to be had if you know everything.
Got it.
Okay.
Make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. Let's throw it to Picky to see our order today.
We will start with Tara.
All right. I'm going to go Tara, Omar, Sarah, 60 questions with 3 score breaks. And we got 3 gross worth equalizer challenges. Excellent. As he looks for his handy cards. Here we go. Are we ready to play Name of Thrones?
Yes.
Are there any steel mills on the table?
Oh, Tara, steel mills?
I think Value Guests have one. Am I remembering right?
That sounds right. I'm pretty sure
write them down now that.
All right, fine. Let's say that that's it. And now after this, there's no more steel meals.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good. Okay. Tara Ariano.
Yeah.
Live of Seattle.
Oh, Live of House Moore. And the show is iZombie.
That is worth 2 points. And that's how you play this game.
Okay.
Omar, Olivia of DC.
Olivia of House Pope, Scandal.
Correct for 2 points. Joseph of Downton. For Sarah. Joseph?
Yeah. Of Downton. Mm-hmm.
I can almost guarantee Sarah DeBunting is going to get 1 point on this question, but can she get two?
I know that the show is Downton Abbey. What's she doing here? But I don't know the last name.
Has Miss Bunting gone?
That is Joseph of House Mosley.
Oh, God. Who knew he even had a first name? All right, so she gets 1 point because she's in Downton Abbey.
Correct.
Okay, got it.
All right, back to Tara.
Yep.
Andy of Maybury.
Oh, shit.
Andy of Maybury.
Okay, well, the show is the Andy Griffith Show, and he's Sheriff Andy something, but I can't remember what his name is on the show.
Anybody? Andy of House Taylor.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
All right, to
Never
Omar.
Gotten that.
Mm-hmm.
Jim of Iowa.
Jim of Iowa.
Oh.
Remember, you can ask for a hint, and I'll give you his house, after which you can name the show for a point.
Let me get the hint.
Jim of House Kirk.
Davenport's own.
Jim of House Kirk, what's the show?
Oh, God, that's right. I can't pull it.
Jim Kirk. James T. Kirk.
Star Trek. Oh, crap.
Oh,
damn it.
Nerds, send your emails to Omar StarTrek.org.
Very tricky not calling him James. Okay.
Okay. Back to Sarah. Dave of Manhattan, Wisconsin, and Canada. Dave of Manhattan, Dave. Wisconsin, and Canada.
Of Manhattan, Wisconsin, and Canada?
Yep. Correct.
So I could use any of these shows, is what you're saying.
It's all...
No.
That's one person, all three locations.
Oh, shit. Okay, then I need a hint.
That's Dave of House Nelson.
News radio?
Good for 1 point.
Yep. Jesus Christ.
Back to Tara.
Yep.
Mojo of Townsville.
Mojo of House JoJo. And the show is the Powerpuff Girls.
That is adorable.
Nice.
To Omar, Arthur of Milwaukee.
Arthur of House Fonzarelli. Happy days.
That's awesome.
2 points.
Yay.
This is to Sarah. Screech of Bayside.
Fuck.
Reach of Bayside.
My mind is emptied of this last name / house.
Why would you know his last name?
Yeah.
Probably mentioned once on the whole show, I'm going to
guess.
Not
sure I knew he had a last name.
Yeah. Well, he's unsaved by the bell. Screech of House Screech? I don't know.
Samuel Screech of House Powers.
All right.
All right.
Never
Screech
in a million
Powers.
Years.
To Tara. Yep. John of Decapod 10. John of Decapod 10.
I guess I need the house.
John of House Zoidberg.
Damn it! Well, then that's
is correct. All right, to Omar. Mm-hmm. Scrooge of Duckburg.
That Scrooge of House McDuck, DuckTales.
Good for 2 points. Temperance of DC.
Oh, God.
Of DC.
This is Bairns.
Bairns.
Her house is house, I don't know. I'm sorry. House Booth?
That's the
house
other end.
Brennan. House Brennan.
Oh, right.
Booth is
sounds
Boreanaz.
Like it could actually be in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Jonathan of Hawkins. And this is for...
Hint.
Jonathan of House Byers. Beers. B-Y-E-R-S.
Nope. I have no idea.
Anybody? No Steel Mills? All right. Jonathan of House Beers. Byers. Stranger Things. Hawkins.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Mara of Los Angeles.
Mara?
M-A-U-R-A.
Oh, Mora. Okay.
Mora. Sorry.
That is Mora of House Pfeffernan from Transparent.
Nice. Is correct. Sorry for my mispronunciation. Bring us into our first score break.
Oh, boy.
Yogi of Jellystone.
Yogi of Jellystone. Yogi of House Bear? Oh, really? Yogi and Friends?
Yeah, you know what? There's a bunch he's in, so I'm just going to assume that that's one of them. Yogi Bear Show could have been, he was in other Hanna-Barbera compilation shows where they all do races or shit.
Yeah.
Like that, so. I was going to give you that point for pretty much anything that came out of your mouth for the show. So,
thanks.
Score break.
All right. Well, Sarah and I are tied with 6 each. Omar is just ahead with 8.
Oh, 6 each. Ooh. So that's a tie. So that means no equalizer challenge.
Okay.
Oh.
So back to the game.
All right.
Tara.
Yep.
Cosmo of Manhattan.
Cosmo, Kramer, Seinfeld. Oh, sorry. Cosmo of House Kramer.
Oh, Seinfeld. Sorry. Not in the form. The correct answer. Shit. Only 1 point.
All right.
Number 17.
Wow.
It's pretty cool. Oof.
It's pretty cool.
For Omar. Doug of Queens. Doug of Queens.
I do not know that last name, but I'm going to say King of Queens.
Correct. That was Doug of House Heffernan.
Yeah, I wouldn't have gotten that.
And this is for Sarah. Picky smiles kindly upon you today. For we are talking of the legend of Lenny of Manhattan.
Oh, that would be Lenny of House Briscoe. Law and Order Mothership.
2 points. Back to Tara. Kara of National City.
Name. Oh, well, Supergirl. I'll say Kara Kent, even though I know that's not right.
Kara of House Zor-El. Oh, all right.
So the guy is Jor-El Zor-El?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, great.
They're all rappers, you know, Kryptonians. Dobby of Central City, or Dobby of Central City.
Dobby?
D-O-B-I-E of Central City.
Okay. Dobby? I'm going to need the show. I mean, I'm going to need the name.
Dobie of House Gillis. I think this is the most, this is the hardest one on the quiz.
Well, the show, I hope.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Dobie Gillis.
There you go. That's the right answer. You just said it.
What?
Yeah. Really? The Many Lives of Dobie Gillis, a.k.a. also known as Dobie Gillis. So you got
old,
the point.
Old show.
I'll take it.
Martin of Detroit.
Martin of Detroit. Martin of Detroit. Is this show Martin? And is it... know his name on the show, so let's try Martin of House Lawrence.
Good guess.
Yeah, worth
that was worth it. Yeah. Martin of House Payne.
Oh, okay.
Sure.
Betty of Queens.
And
okay, Betty of House Suarez.
Oh, Ugly Betty.
Good for 1 point. Saeed of Iraq. Sorry, Saeed of Iraq.
Oh, crap. What was his last name, Saeed? I know it's Lost, but I Saeed.
Yeah, another character you'd never really hear his last name, probably yeah. After one episode.
I thought that Saeed was his of last House, name.
Pardon me?
Is it Jarma or something?
It's
like
close.
That?
Yeah. Saeed of House Jarrar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No.
Larry of Los Angeles. Larry of Los Angeles.
Larry of Los Angeles. Let's try.
Couple answers here I can think of.
Larry of House Sanders? The Larry Sanders Show?
Oh, wow. That's
hey.
The third one.
Oh,
yeah,
good one.
Sure. And that's worth 2 points. Could also go with Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Sure.
Or the actual answer on the page, Larry of House Wilcox for Chips.
Oh, sure.
I was thinking Three's Company, or is that San Francisco?
That's San Diego.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Okay, Theo of Brooklyn.
That's Theo of House Huxtable on The Cosby Show.
Correct. 2 points. Maggie of Springfield.
That is Maggie of House Simpson. Simpsons.
Correct for 2 points. Mark of Chicago.
Mark?
Mark.
Not Mork.
Mark.
That's, yeah, Denver. Mark of Chicago. Mark.
Oh, if you don't know
Mark of House Green from ER.
There
correct.
You go.
Laura,
probably more of than one of those two.
Laura of Caprica.
Laura of House Roslyn from Battlestar Galactica.
Correct. 2 points. Horatio of Miami.
Oh, I know it's CSI. The hell is his name? Horatio Kane? Horatio of House Kane?
And what was what's the show?
CSI? Miami?
2 points. Bring us into our second score break. Michael of Newport Beach.
Oh, okay.
Michael of Newport Beach?
Correct.
Hint.
Michael of House Bluth.
Oh, Arrested Development.
Still a very, very close game. I have 13 points. Sarah has 14 points. Omar has 15 points.
All right. That means we have time for the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge.
Boy. Okay.
This is you, correct?
Yeah, it's me.
Okay. Answer three of these six mid-80s Trivial Pursuit TV questions, right?
Alexis Carrington. Yes.
What was the first TV... Sorry, what was the first U.S. TV sports show to originate from the Soviet Union?
Oh, God, I don't know. Wide World of Sports. What?
I give it to you, even though the correct title is ABC's Wide World of Sports.
Right, fine.
But I'm in a generous mood.
Okay.
Whose floundering fan club tried to raise money in 1986 with Live Ed benefit? With a Live Ed benefit. Whose floundering fan club tried to raise money in 1986 with a Live Ed benefit? It was called Live Ed.
Okay. Ed Asner.
Mr. Ed.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness. We were kind of hinting at this. I was hinting at this earlier. Who said of tying damsels to railroad tracks, if I could only stop, but I can't stop, I've got this thing?
I think I actually know this.
Snidely Whiplash? What?
I did know that. Huh.
What newscaster did Ronald Reagan phone to demand a correction after his Taiwan policy was blasted?
Walter Cronkite. Dan Rather?
Dan Rather.
Shit.
What game show got rolling after the line, "Hello, stars"?
Hollywood Squares?
Correct.
Yay!
All right.
Yay!
Shits and giggles.
Oh.
What initials does Thomas Magnum use in addressing his favorite helicopter pilot?
TC.
All right, you got 4 out of 6. Congratulations. Back to the game. Whose turn is it?
Me.
Tara.
Yes.
Xander of Sunnydale.
Oh my God, what's his last name?
Damn it.
Oh no.
The show?
Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and I can't remember his name, Sarah. What is it?
Harris.
Xander of House Harris.
House Harris.
That was... All right.
All right.
Omar. Josh of West Covina. Josh of West Covina. I suppose two possible answers here. Right?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna need the hint.
Josh of House Chan.
Chan?
Chan. Like Jackie. Know the show?
I do not.
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Oh.
All right. This next question is brought to you by Trivial Pursuit. Blake of Denver.
Oh, so this isn't Morgan Mindy? Just kidding. I believe that's Blake of House Carrington on Dynasty.
Yeah, that is worth 2 points. Amanda of West Hollywood.
Amanda of House Woodward on Melrose Place.
Good for 2 points. Lynette of Wisteria Lane.
Oof.
I know it's
good, not a good Omar question.
It's Desperate Housewives.
Yep.
Lynette of where? Of Wisteria Lane?
Yes. But what's the house? What's her last name?
Lynette of House Mabry. No, I don't know.
Do you remember it, Sarah? I can't believe I do.
Scavo?
Yes. Yeah.
Something yeah.
you would never watched guess a frame in a of that years. Shit, but I remember that. Yep.
I did watch that show.
John of Cincinnati. John of Cincinnati for Sarah.
The show is John from Cincinnati. What was his last name, though? John of House Christman? I don't remember his name.
John of House Monad. Monad.
Oh, barf.
Jesus.
Sonny of Miami.
Sonny. Oh, Sonny of House Crockett on Miami Vice.
Danny of San Francisco. Danny of San Francisco.
I'm going to need the last name.
Danny of House Tanner.
That would be Full House.
Good for a point. Or Louise of Manhattan.
What is it again? Louise?
Louise of Manhattan, as in G's Louise.
G's Louise. What?
Yeah. No, the G's is no part of the clip. I'm just saying.
No, Louise. I got it. Yeah. J-E-Z Louise. Okay. Louise of House Jefferson on the Jeffersons.
2 points. Yes. Walter of Boston.
Walter of House Bishop from Fringe.
Mark of Pawnee.
Parks and Recreation. Oh, fuck. What was his last name?
Yeah. I'll give you this clue. It's a mouthful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mark of House.
I'll give it to you if you're in the ballpark. I'm not going to expect an exact one on this one.
Oh, that dipshit.
Whoa. Editorial comment.
Dipshitopolis, Omar. Jeez.
Mark. I cannot remember it.
Ren Danowitz.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Barry of Central City. Barry of Central City.
Barry. Barry. All right, show us the Flash. Barry. I can think of the actor's last name.
Yeah.
Barry. Barry of House Williams. I don't know.
Barry of House Allen. Barry. Marshall of Erie. Marshall of Erie.
Hint.
Marshall of House Teller.
I have no idea.
Ooh. Erie?
Oh.
Erie, Indiana is the show. Major Tony of Cocoa Beach.
Is this... I Dream of Jeannie.
I'll give you a hint. This last name's been in the quiz already. This house has already been mentioned.
He's an astronaut. Major Tony Miller.
You're Tony of House Nelson.
Tony Miller is the football guy from 90210. Nope. Played by the same guy from that was Abraham on Walking Dead.
This is question 45, bringing us into our last official score break. Amy of Hartford. Amy of Hartford.
Oh, Jesus. And then her mom had a different last name. Okay, it is Judging Amy. And I just don't remember. Amy of House Brenneman. I know that's wrong, but
Amy, I don't remember either.
Of House Gray.
Oh, right.
Oh God, of course.
All right. Now, Omar has 19 points. Sarah has 21 points. I have 22.
All right, that means Omar is time to step up too. The Grossworth Equalizer Challenge. Get half of these six mid-80s TV questions correct. We're going to give you 2 points. Did June Cleaver attend college?
Yes.
He did. I dropped the card. What Otto King memorized four lines for a 1986 Miami Vice episode?
What Otto King?
Otto King. How many famous Otto Kings are there?
Like two?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Iacocca?
Nah! Hey! So my other one's like John DeLorean, right? Those are the
I
only
was
two.
I going to go with Crazy Eddie.
Somebody okay. Ford?
Sure. Joe Isuzu.
What long-running canine caper had The Secret of Silent Hills as its theme song? What long-running canine caper had The Secret of Silent Hills as its theme song?
Is it Lassie?
It is. Look at that.
Shit. Boom, boom, wow. Nice boom. Work, Omar.
Wow. All right, Omar. For shits and giggles, what awards does the broadcasting industry consider even more prestigious than the Emmys?
The Clio?
Peabody?
Peabody.
Oh, right.
What show's general store proprietor answers to Niels Olsen?
Oh, Kim.
What show? I'm sorry?
What show? What show's general store proprietor answers to Neil Olson?
Nils, I think.
Nils.
That I don't know.
That's Little House. Lastly, what show finished its 20th season at the top of the soap opera ratings in the 78-79 season?
General Hospital?
As the world turns. Well, good thing you got those first three.
Those first three. Good job, Omar.
All right. Back.
Kim's going to kill me.
So he gets 2 points.
Yep. I've already added them.
Hope of Philadelphia getting back in the game. Hope of Philadelphia. Oh, Jesus.
And
Hope of House Murdoch Stedman.
Princeton graduate she was.
The soap?
30 something.
Oh, right.
Jane of Boston. Jane of Boston.
It's not Jane the Virgin. I'm gonna need the hint.
All right, it's a good hint. Jane of House Rizzoli.
Oh, is it Rizzoli and someone?
Who knows?
Jesus.
I'm going to give you a hint. You got the first part right.
Yeah. Oh, I cannot remember. Rizzoli and Thyme?
No.
Rizzoli and Bash. Just kidding. Rizzoli and Isles.
Rizzoli and Isles.
Rizzoli and Cannoli.
This is to Sarah?
Yes.
Yep.
Look at this. John of Baltimore. Also, John of Manhattan.
Yep.
Also, John of Sesame Street.
Yep.
What? Oh, okay. This actually also could be a Game of Thrones character. John of House Munch? Homicide?
Yep. That's 2 points. Jessica of Cabot Cove.
That's Jessica of House Fletcher. Murder, She Wrote.
2 points. Stephen of Beach City. Stephen of Beach City.
I need the hint. I don't even know what the Beach
Stephen
City is.
Stephen of House Universe.
Stephen Universe.
Earl of Pangea. Earl of Pangea.
Earl of Pangea? All right, I'm going to take the hint just in case.
Earl of House Sinclair.
It did not help. And now it's not. My name is Earl, so I don't know.
Okay, but wait, before you answer, Pangea is a big hint of the show's timeline.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. Don't know.
All right. Anybody?
The most popular show of our 1991 week, Dinosaurs.
Correct.
Oh, God, that thing.
Laverne of Milwaukee.
That oh shit oh is it Laverne of House DeFazio? Of Laverne and Shirley.
That is good for 2 points.
Nice pull.
Silvio of North Jersey.
Oh,
Silvio of North Jersey.
It's It's The Sopranos, but what was Silvio's last name?
Having 15 embolisms right now. Oh.
At least. Fucking internet.
I'm not going to get the last name.
We're in deeper into the hell of your own knowledge.
Led there.
Sarah.
By Virgil.
Silvio of House Dante. Mm. Logan of Neptune. Logan of Neptune.
Logan of House Eccles. Veronica Mars.
2 points. Mike of Wisconsin. Mike of Wisconsin.
Hint.
Mike of House. The strongest house in game. House Nelson. Be strong.
Okay. Is this Mystery Science Theater 3000?
It is. Good for 1 point.
Nice.
Eric of Dillon.
That is Eric of House Taylor, Friday Night Lights.
There we
yeah.
go. Picky. Doing a good job there. Stefan of Mystic Falls.
Stefan of Mystic Falls.
Oh, really?
Falls.
Stefan of Mystic Falls.
Yeah.
I mean, but he acts like a Stefan. That is The Vampire Diaries. And his and Damon's last name is House of Nelson. Fuck.
Oh, good guess.
It's actually House of Benson.
No, it's not.
House of Salvatore.
Oh, fuck. Of course.
All right. Everybody's got one question left, so let's quickly get the scores.
Okay.
This Omar. Is not an official score break.
Omar has 25 points. Sarah has 26 points. I have 27 points.
Ah! All right. So you got to get these twos. Who's first?
Me.
Juliet of Alabama.
This is Juliet of House Barnes of Nashville.
All right, for 2 points. All right.
Nice.
Kenneth of Stone Mountain.
That is Kenneth of House Parcell, 30 Rock.
Also good for 2 points. And finishing us off, Peter of Quahog.
Of Quahog? Hint.
Peter of House Griffin.
Doesn't help.
Steel Mill?
Steel Mill.
Oh.
Family Guy.
Good for 1 point. Did that help?
Nope.
Did not help him. You just wasted the value guest Steel Mill. A pox upon your house, House Kayaga. Shits and giggles?
Sure.
First person to answer this wins a, you know, I'm going to put on a line. Going to replenish the Steel Mill. This okay. is worth the Steel Mill. First person to give me the house and the show gets the Steel Mill. Elizabeth of London.
Elizabeth Corday, ER?
You're overthinking it.
Okay.
Elizabeth
House
of London.
Windsor, the crown.
Sarah!
Good one.
Correct.
Tara!
Tara.
Good job, Tara.
Good job. That was close.
That was a great game.
Yeah, that was good. Well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We put all our brains together to make a meal out of the discussion of The Walking Dead mid-season premiere before Sarah presented the blotter presenting red-hot Texas-style crime documentaries. We then went around the dial with stops at Humans.
Heard of him.
Heard of him.
Heard of him.
Legion, Imposters, and The Man Who Will Calmly Murder You. Good news, that show you like is coming back in style, and Omar led the charge with his successful canon submission of the soon-to-be-former Twin Peaks series finale. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time, putting in her within reach of the season victory next week. Remember...
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano, Sarah D. Bunting,
do you want dessert?
And Omar Gallega.
Oh, I miss Negan.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. right here. Extra Hot Great.
That's damn fine coffee you got here in Twin Peaks. And damn good cherry pie.
Brilliant. I have absolutely no idea what's going on.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.